This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
To drive cutting-edge research on flood-tolerant rice, disease-resistant wheat, and much more. These innovations will reach millions across the poorest countries.
That was British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak on the need to find ways to increase food production. Details coming up also. A Gaza journalist shares his experiences. And Uganda's new license plate technology has raised human rights concerns. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. International news organizations are quoting senior officials in Israel and with the Hamas organization in Gaza saying a deal could be reached later today to release some hostages, Hamas fighters. In return, Israel would free some Palestinian prisoners it holds. There have been negotiations for weeks over a hostage release that would be paired with a temporary ceasefire in Gaza and more humanitarian aid. Previous preconditions of an agreement have proven premature. Israel's army is widening its operations across northern Gaza, where they battled Hamas militants in the crowded Jabalia refugee camp. The Associated Press said it could not independently confirm details of the fighting. Israel says Hamas uses civilians and hospitals as shields, while critics say Israel's siege and relentless aerial bombardment amount to collective punishment of the territory's 2.3 million Palestinians after Hamas's October 7th attacks in southern Israel. Palestinian health authorities say more than 12,700 Palestinians have been killed since the war began. Some 1,200 people have been killed in Israel. Most of the deaths occurred on October 7th. The fighters also took around 240 Israelis and foreign nationals captive. Also today, Chinese state media reported that China's leader Xi Jinping called for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas and the release of civilian detainees as he addressed a virtual summit of the leaders of the BRICS grouping. Israel today recalled its ambassador ahead of a South African vote on closing Israel's embassy in Pretoria. Tensions have risen between the two countries over the conflict. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has said his country believes Israel is committing war crimes and genocide in Gaza. We have on the line now journalist Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem for the latest developments. Welcome to African News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you, here.
So, the leader of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, is saying they are close to reaching a truce agreement with Israel that is believed to include a hostage exchange of women and children. Is there a sense among people that it could happen soon?
Yes, definitely. The Israeli cabinet is meeting tonight, in fact, at 8 o'clock to approve it. And it's being seen here as pretty much a done deal, which would include Hamas releasing 50 Israeli hostages, women and children, 50 hostages, not clear if they're all Israeli, including over 4 days, so something like 13 a day. Israel agreed to release 150 Palestinian women and adolescents who were convicted of things like stone throwing and a 5-day ceasefire. During that time, Israel also agreed not to use drones to look for the hostages over Gaza at least 6 hours a day, and large amounts of humanitarian aid, including fuel, which Hamas desperately needs in order to continue to power the tunnels and things like that, will be let into Gaza. And they even say that if it's successful and everything goes well, there could be an extension of the ceasefire in exchange for the release of more of the hostages. So it's not, according to both American and Israeli officials, it's not 100% done, but it's very, very close.
And new developments every day, Linda. What is known about the fighting around the Jabalia refugee camp?
Yes, so Israel says it has surrounded the camp. The Jabalia camp is in northern Gaza and has been the scene of past very heavy fighting. Israel says that it's, you know, clearing out these areas slowly and looking for Hamas gunmen. Israel has killed hundreds, if not more than 1,000 Hamas gunmen, has arrested another at least 1,500, including those who came into Israel on October 7th. But they say there are still thousands of Hamas gunmen in Gaza who are in this tunnel network that runs underneath the Gaza Strip.
And what has the Israeli government been saying about South Africa's allegations the defense forces are committing war crimes?
Well, they completely reject those allegations. They say that it was Hamas that committed war crimes when it came on October 7th and murdered 1,200 Israeli, mostly civilians. And they completely reject these South African claims. And they showed their displeasure by recalling the ambassador.
And we were talking a lot about the Al-Shifa Hospital, but there are reports from the Indonesian hospital. Come after weeks of focus on Gaza's, the main medical facility, Al-Shifa, was the main focus. Now it is the Indonesian hospital in northern Gaza, as Israel.
Talk to us about that. Yes, correct. There's been heavy fighting around the Indonesian hospital. There are believed to be about 700 patients and medical staff there. Israel says that for weeks it had told everybody possible to leave northern Gaza, that it was going to, gradually take over this area. The devastation from northern Gaza is pretty amazing. It's going to take years before Palestinians who were living in northern Gaza and have moved to southern Gaza are able to return to their homes, if at all. So, even once there is a ceasefire in place and the fighting ends, whenever that is, you're talking about a huge effort to rebuild Gaza.
And lastly, the death toll has surpassed 13,000 after weeks of Israeli attacks. The news today, what I see is 1.6 million people have been displaced in Gaza. Where are these people?
So these people moved from northern Gaza to southern Gaza or were displaced within southern Gaza. So Gaza is a very small coastal strip of land along the Mediterranean, and there were 2.3 million Palestinians living in Gaza. And even before this war started, Gaza was extremely poor, facing a humanitarian crisis, has been under an Israeli blockade since 2007. And now, of course, it's just a terrible situation. So people are sheltering in United Nations schools and places like that. Anybody who has a place to stay in southern Gaza or families have been staying there. There have been Israeli airstrikes on southern Gaza that has also killed people, but most of the fighting has been in the north. But, for example, UN officials say that the population of people sheltering in its schools is 9 times the maximum that they had ever planned for. So, and there's concern about a growing humanitarian crisis in these UN facilities. Doctors say they're seeing more cases of diarrhea, respiratory infections. There's even there's concern that even cholera and other diseases could break out. And it's also the start of the winter. Yesterday and the day before was a very heavy Israeli rainstorm in Israel and Gaza, and it must just be miserable to be anywhere in Gaza now.
Journalist Linda Gradstein updating us from Jerusalem. Thank you for your input.
Thank you, Yair.
A journalist based in Gaza told VOA of the overwhelming experience in documenting the Israeli-Hamas conflict on the besieged enclave following the October 7th attack by Palestinian militant group Hamas. Fuad Abu Kamash, a resident of the southern part of Gaza, told VOA he is embedded with an emergency team covering the war from within an ambulance. He details finding children's toys among the rubble as Israel continues its bombardment of Gaza in its bid to annihilate the militant group Hamas. Kamash spoke in Arabic with VOA's Betty Ayoub, And my colleague, Ignatius Anor, brings us a translation version of his comments.
I saw a child who was the sole survivor from his entire family. Carrying this child, knowing he's now an orphan, is a heart-wrenching experience. Witnessing such scenes is something no one wants to endure. I've witnessed countless horrific incidents that have become a blur in my memory. It feels like I'm trapped in a never-ending nightmare. The sight of children's limbs, a baby's foot, and parents crying for their lost child is beyond belief. Everywhere I go, I find children's toys among the rubble, a stark reminder that these buildings were once filled with innocent children. It begs the question, are these children to blame? What have they done to deserve this? Given our responsibilities, we must remain strong and resilient. Any sign of weakness could impede our ability to perform duties effectively. We witness the horrors of war, offering assistance and documenting events as they unfold. Our goal is to support victims and be there for them in every possible way. Today, amidst the chaos, I managed to bring a smile to a little girl's face, despite her injuries and the overwhelming stress I am under. Being able to make her laugh was a truly uplifting experience. It was the best thing that has happened to me in a while.
That was VOA's Ignatius Anor bringing us the words of Fuad Abu Kamash, a journalist in Gaza. Kamash spoke with my colleague Betty Ayub. The Israeli government says it is doing everything it can to avoid civilian casualties in its fight to dismantle the Hamas militant organization. International critics, however, are demanding a ceasefire in the fighting, and some say Israel is collectively punishing all Palestinians in Gaza for the actions of Hamas. For more on the conflict in Gaza, check out voaafrica.com and also voanews.com. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Officials in the Republic of Congo say 37 youths were killed and a number injured in a stampede overnight during an army recruitment drive in a stadium in Brazzaville, the country's capital. Last week, the army in the Central African nation, also known as Congo-Brazzaville, announced it was recruiting 1,500 people aged between 18 and 25. Prime Minister Anatoli Kolyne Makoso said a crisis unit has been set up under his authority. Would-be recruits had been directed to go to the Michel de Orono Stadium in the heart of Brazzaville. Local residents told the French news agency AFP that many people were still in the stadium on Monday night when the stampede began. They said some people had tried to force their way through the gates, with many being trampled in the scramble. AFP says details of the event remain hazy and it has not been able to independently verify them. Innovations in food production could alleviate hunger for millions of people, according to officials in Britain, which hosted a global summit on food insecurity Monday. Some critics say the focus on technology ignores the real drive of food shortages, growing inequality and poverty. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Somalia is among the countries worst hit by food insecurity. Some 113,000 people have been forced to flee their homes after extreme rainfall caused extensive flooding in recent days. The floods come a year after Somalia suffered its worst drought in 40 years. The Somali president was among the delegates attending the Global Food Security Summit in London on Monday. The host, British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, said mobilising global finance and partnerships to drive innovation would alleviate food insecurity.
To drive cutting-edge research on flood-tolerant rice, disease-resistant wheat, and much more. These innovations will reach millions across the poorest countries.
Sunak said climate change, conflict, the aftermath of COVID-19 and Russia's invasion of Ukraine are the main drivers of current food insecurity. But can new technology end global hunger? It's one tool in the box, says analyst Steve Wiggins at the Overseas Development Institute.
The fundamentals of global hunger are the fundamentals of poverty, marginalisation, and people being in situations of extraordinary vulnerability. Those are the fundamentals of hunger, and that's what we have to drive towards. Of course, there are technical advances that we get that we're very happy for, which make things a little bit easier.
Those include innovations like solar-powered irrigation in Mali, says Wiggins.
So if you want to pump water onto your fields, it's becoming increasingly easy without having to spend money on diesel to do so.
Critics say the focus on technology ignores the main driver of food insecurity. Nick Nisbet is from Britain's Institute of Development Studies.
Technological solutions tend to focus on the supply side, so kind of, you know, new tech and for agriculture and supply chains and so on. But what we actually need to do is to tackle the inequalities that lie behind that hunger. Possibly the simplest thing to do is actually to give people food or to give people the money to go out and buy and purchase food in markets themselves.
Outside the summit, pro-Palestinian protesters highlighted the growing humanitarian crisis in the war-torn Gaza Strip. The United Nations has warned that food and water supplies are running perilously low as Israel continues to restrict aid shipments into the territory following the October 7th attack by Hamas militants. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Guinea's ruling military council has ordered a probe into toppled President Alpha Conde, the country's first democratically elected leader, for treason. The move follows ongoing investigations into alleged killings, torture, kidnapping and rape. Conde was ousted in a September 2021 coup after more than a decade in power and has been living in exile in Turkey. A letter sent to the public prosecutor to the capital Conakry by Justice Minister Alfonso Charles Wright said, "You are ordered to initiate legal proceedings for alleged acts of treason, criminal conspiracy and complicity in the illicit possession of arms and ammunition." In 2010, Conde became the first democratically elected president of the former French colony after decades of authoritarian government. His decision to run for a third term triggered protests, which were violently repressed. After the 2021 coup, military leader Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya promised to hand the reins of government to elected civilians by January 2026. A report by Human Rights Watch says Uganda's new license plate tracking surveillance system has raised concerns about privacy rights and freedom of association and expression. The system allows the government to track the locations of all registered vehicles in real time, including foreign cars temporarily in the country. Human Rights Watch urges the government to scrap the system as it risks individual rights. Additionally, vehicle owners must pay a registration fee to obtain new plates with tracking devices provided by Uganda Telecommunications Corporations Limited. For more insight, VOA's Pauline Diho via Skype spoke with Oriem Nieko, the author and Uganda researcher at Human Rights Watch.
Human Rights Watch, this past week, we put out a statement talking about Uganda's new, what they're calling the Intelligent Transport Monitoring System, which is basically a surveillance system that has been introduced in the country that includes attaching tracking devices to the number plates of every vehicle in the country. The owners of private vehicles are going to be required to register anew for these new number plates in February next year. That is going to allow the government to track their location in real time at all times.
That's scary for a lot of people, especially people who own private cars. If these were government cars, I would say sure. But you're looking at invasion of privacy here.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that it poses several risks to people's to the restriction of people's rights to privacy. I mean, the authorities knowing or having the ability to locate where every vehicle is at a given time is very risky.
There are people who said that perhaps this is not a new thing. This has been going on with, of course, the introduction of the CCTV cameras that came back a couple of years ago. In Kampala, you have cameras all over the streets. So there are people who argue that this is not a new thing. It's been going on. And it's a way of Uganda trying to make sure that its citizens, its people are protected.
The government has been steadily increasing its capacity to surveil the population, first with the introduction of those CCTV cameras that you mentioned. But now they're adding to it with the number plates, and they're also adding new cameras, they say, that will have the capacity to do facial recognition and also recognize other elements in vehicles like the number plates.
Would it be fair to say, for example, I've been to countries, even here in the United States where I am, there is surveillance all over the place. Once you buy a car, it's registered in the system. Everybody knows if police stops you, they can easily pull up your record and make reference, connect your address to the ownership of the car. Now, how is this that I'm describing different from what we have in Uganda?
Yeah, it's true. Most countries in the world surveil people in some way or the other. And the difference in this particular case is that Uganda is taking it a step further by adding these tracking devices. There's no other country in the world that has the capacity to track every single vehicle in the country. It's important when we talk about surveillance to remember that the right to privacy is a right, of course, that, like most rights, can be inhibited in some way, but it has to be done in a way when it is strictly necessary, or alternatively, where the surveillance matches the issue, the risk that is trying to be addressed. In this particular case, that doesn't apply. The risk that we are trying to that the government is trying to address just doesn't match the limitations on people's rights to privacy.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was Oriem Nieko, a Uganda researcher at Human Rights Watch, speaking with VOA's Paul Indiho. Two people died and at least 20 were injured when a car plowed into a crowd of supporters of Liberian president-elect Joseph Boakai. Police did not give a reason for the incident, which occurred last evening, but a spokesman for Boakai's Unity Party said they believed it was a deliberate act. Authorities say the driver fled the scene. A senior member of staff at the John F. Kennedy Hospital in the capital, Monrovia, told the French news agency AFP that two people are dead and one is in critical condition. The police say 12 men and 4 women were taken to the JFK hospital with injuries. Police were searching other hospitals for victims. Boakai's party said the car drove into supporters celebrating outside their headquarters after Boakai was officially declared the winner of last week's election. Witnesses say the driver of the car, which was parked near the celebrating supporters, flashed the headlights, then turned them off and drove into the crowd. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Jumbe Hamza, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.